Welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. I'm the producer, Caleb Keith, and I'm joined by our hosts, Drs. Rod Rosenblatt, Scott Keith, and Adam Francisco. Follow these great minds as they answer pressing questions about theology, history, and apologetics. This show is brought to you by 1517 The Legacy Project, serving to proclaim the gospel to all people, especially those broken by the church.
Welcome to the Thinking Fellows. I'm producer Caleb, and today we have a very special episode. We're doing a Father's Day special. So this is going to air the Friday before Father's Day. So I think, what's that, the 17th of June? Today I'm a young father, but I'm sitting around a table with three very experienced fathers. And so maybe I can get some wisdom this episode, along with the rest of our listeners here. So I'm going to start off just hopefully asking the guys some questions today, maybe get some stories about being a dad or from their fathers and various other things here. But before we jump right into the episode, I just wanted to give everybody who listens to the show a couple updates. Right now the campaign will have just ended for donations by 2 days. So that campaign went to the 15th. At the time of this recording, that's on June 5th. We're about halfway, so the campaign had 10 more days. We're going to be halfway, so we wanted to thank everybody who's donated to that campaign. If you're listening to this and it's a little late and you're going, oh my gosh, I forgot to donate to the campaign before the 15th, do not worry. Guess what? Our donations page never closes, so you can still log on there. You can still donate to 1517 Legacy and the Thinking Fellows. At give.1517legacy.com, and that still goes to help the show. And we just want to thank everybody who's a part of that and helps keep these podcasts running. I think that's it for the updates. I don't know, on the 17th, are you going to be anywhere that weekend, Dr. Keith? I think you're talking somewhere.
I'm in Michigan. I'd have to look at my calendar real quick. I'll be in Michigan that weekend doing Bean Dad. I think Cadillac, Michigan.
So for Father's Day weekend, you'll be there.
Right.
People listening to this in that area, you have, 2 days now to see if you can make it out there.
And then I think the Monday after, too, I'm in come back to me. I'll find it.
He'll find it. We'll get that later. It'll also be in the show notes. So, if you're in the Michigan area. That's a big state, so maybe not all parts of Michigan, but
June 17th and 19th, Cadillac, Michigan, at Emmanuel Lutheran Church. June 20th, I'll be in Hudson, Michigan, at Dave Ruffner's Church.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Trying to find the name here. Anyway. Those are 2 dates.
Yeah, that'll be a fun weekend. So anybody who can make it out there, I think even people from the greater Chicago area, the drive probably isn't horrendous.
It's several. I mean, we're in California, so somebody tells us to drive 4 hours, and we're like, eh, that's not bad. But you get out to the Midwest, and you usually tell them to drive more than 60 miles, and it's a bit of a trip. But I think it's probably 2.5-3 hours to Joel's Church in Cadillac from downtown Chicago.
All right. So, yeah, so everybody in that area who listens – feel free to stop on by. Keep that in the show notes. So time to ask some questions. I guess I'll start with Dr. Keith because you've written the book on fatherhood, huh? The book, Being Dad, Father is a Picture of God's Grace. And you base that off of the story of the prodigal son and some work from Rod. Maybe you could start off, why was this work so important? Why do you, for your first book published besides maybe your dissertation, why'd you choose fatherhood?
To be honest with you, I'd have to say that really, as far as any desire I've had to ever publish a book, it would be this one. I don't really, whether my dissertation or not makes it beyond, my living room. It would probably be nice, but I don't care so much about. But this idea, hit me the hardest. I always say when I go out and give this talk that when I was at Concordia in the 90s, Concordia was a much smaller place then. And I was a theology, philosophy major. And if you were a theology major in the 90s at Concordia, there were probably, what, four professors in the department? Mm-hmm. I think you, Steve, Dr. Brighton, who wasn't even Dr. Brighton until my senior year.
Right.
And Steve, Dr. Mueller, too, was Professor Mueller. And then Bob Dargitz, mm-hmm. who's now at Emmanuel Orange. And so if you were a theology major in the early 90s at Concordia, you had a lot of classes from the same people. And sort of administratively, it was a much easier path to navigate, too, if you wanted to participate in creating your own education in a lot of ways. And so after I took one class with Rod, mm-hmm. I decided to take as many classes as I could with Rod. And sometimes that meant that we'd sit down at a table and we'd write a class, you know, that we'd do independent study and try to recruit some other people to come in on and do. And as I took these classes, I learned the subject matter to the best of my ability, whether it was philosophy or theology. But along the way, for those that know Rod, that you always get a little extra. You don't just get, if you're philosophy class, you're not just getting philosophy. You'll get some politics in there. You'll get life lessons in there along the way.
Politics? And
just some color. Same thing with theology. And after about two or three classes, I started paying attention to one particular theme that came up time and time again, mostly because I was a new dad. When I got to Concordia, we had you. You weren't even a year old when I got there. And I didn't have a dad growing up. My dad died when I was two. And so having you, I knew that the only thing in the world that I really, really cared about was being good at being your dad. And that I didn't really know exactly what that meant or what that looked like. And so in these classes, I would pay attention because Rod would drop these nuggets of information about being a man or about, he'd say to us things like, have you seen that special that Bill Moyers did on Robert Bly's A Gathering of Men? And my sense was always that 98% of the class tuned him out. We didn't have Facebook back then, so they weren't Facebooking, but they tuned him out when they were scribbling on their desk or something. And I zeroed in on that because A Gathering of Men, I'd never even heard of anything like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, grown up being raised by two women, and I wanted to know what that was about. And he dropped little nuggets about fatherhood. And at the end of the day, the message that he taught us about fatherhood was nothing like I had ever heard whatsoever. I had taken a lot of advice on being a dad because, again, I didn't have one growing up. And it always had to do with sort of leading your home, but in sort of that, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord kind of way, you know, which I'm not saying is bad, but it's just sort of common, right? That sort of approach that says your job as a father is to make sure everything in your house is running as smoothly as possible, that your kids are polite to everyone, that they behave well in church, that they always listen to their mom, that you always back mom up, that type of thing. And then I heard from Rod sort of the opposite, that your job as a dad was, you know, essentially to be there, to create moments of magic, I don't think he used the exact terminology to be the mouthpiece of grace in the home, but I would say it that way, to be the mouthpiece of grace in your home, to be the voice of forgiveness, to be the one who provides those sort of, reading later, heard Tolkien describe it as moments of you catastrophe, those good catastrophes where you come in and you change everything around. And it blew me away. And I sort of just put it back in my mind and said, man, I'd really like to know more about this and maybe someday do something with this. And what I really was hoping for was that Rod would sort of systematize it. I studied Melanchthon, systematic theology. I'm kind of like that. I like to know sort of how things work. And it never really happened because that's just not his way, really. It's the way he does it is actually better to sort of teach you by just being that person. And then in, I think, 2003, I heard a recorded lecture that you did at Paul Zoll's church called When Good Fathers Die, It's Always Too Soon. And it rocked my world. In fact, Caleb, you probably even remember. I remember sitting out on the deck of our little shed in the backyard where we had the reloading station where you'd go out and reload shotgun shells for a couple hours a night. I remember sitting out on that little deck playing that to you and having you listen to it and talking to you about it and just trying to describe to you how much it blew me away. And what blew me away is that it was every idea I had sort of gleaned from you in class to sort of put down on paper in one shot. So then years later when I got to Concordia, probably 10 years later, as soon as I got there, I started talking to Rod about writing a book on it and asked him if he wanted to do it. And he basically said, no. and I said, well, we should do it together. And he said, well, how about I give you all my research? And I said, okay. And then I did it. And bounced things off of Rod and other people along the way. Certainly had him look at the final version before it went out, make sure it represented well what I had been taught. And that's how we got Being Dad, Father is a Picture of God's Grace. It's why when he's around, when I'm speaking or selling the books, and people want me to sign them, I always like to have him at the table to sign them too. One, he wrote several stories and the preface. And two, because really it's his work that I tried to express as well as I could.
Yeah, I think that's really fair to it. I really drafted you into doing that with me giving you the research that I had done in the background. But I couldn't be more excited about that book. There's a reason that they put a picture of me reading that book up on the site as mm-hmm. a sort of a, and a good reason, because I enjoy the book. It is not a how-to book. If you're looking for that, there are a zillion of them out there. This isn't one of those. But it's a readable, theological, grace-centered, Christ-centered approach that just is what philosophers call sui generis, one of a kind. You won't find others like this. So I recommend it anytime I can to anybody who might be interested, and without reservation. I didn't just write the preface for it. I want him on Washington Post or New York Times real-time conversation because he's written a book that affects how a family can function well, and it's going to be utterly against the culture that fathers are disposable, trivial, sperm donors.
In the background, heavy.
Yeah, enforcers. Right. There's none of that.
Mom with bigger biceps.
Yep.
Babysitter.
Babysitter, that one. That's the one these days that kills me. It's sort of unique to our era that the person, you know, who's been entrusted with these lives is relegated to the role of babysitter. And you'll even hear dad say it. I'm babysitting the kids today.
Yeah.
You're not a babysitter. You're their father.
Yeah.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
Interesting. So when you talk about this, the title picture as like God's grace, right? So this is all centered on grace, which is interesting because that's the opposite of what I would say is the typical, even from Christian mouths.
Yep.
Is Father is the law.
Yep.
There's no gospel to it. It's about having orderly kids, as you said.
Yep.
Earlier. So Rod, where does that idea come for you? If Dr. Keith is attributing kind of this inspiration from you, how'd you come by it?
My own dad. He took us to a to a pietistic Lutheran church, and I've never been able to figure that out because it never had any traction inside of him. I think I know, and I'll verify it in heaven. I think it was because the pastor was no idiot. He was not just a first tenor like Pavarotti singing the service every Sunday. The Bible Hour. He was no fool. And I think my dad enjoyed being there for that Bible hour, even though it was under a pietist. But as I said, there was none of that in him. I remember one time I was at the University of Washington, and I came back home to Tacoma, and one of our conversations was, he said, "Do you have enough money?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm doing fine." He said, "No, you're not." He said, "I'll put a little more in next week. It's no good to be low on money when you're a college student." And it was just story after story after story. He bought a farm for us right underneath Mount Rainier in an old logging town called Eatonville. We could look right up to Mount Rainier from the valley. Then he stocked in this old, old farmhouse, had a crank phone, party lines. He stocked the closet of the bedroom on the first floor with every single caliber of ammunition you could imagine. 12-gauge, 16-gauge, 410, 38 Special, 45 ACP, 30-30 Winchester, just from ceiling to floor.
Can you imagine?
A hand trap, boxes like, of clay pigeons.
You'd open it up and be like angels were singing.
Yes. and it never ran out.
Yeah.
We would reach in and grab boxes of 22 shells and put them in our pockets and go shoot them up and then come back and do the same thing again. And the thing never ran out. It was like a cornucopia of ammunition. Now, the mothers, the city kids' mothers, boys, thought they were going to die that weekend, and the boys thought they already had and had gone to heaven. You know? It was just caliber after caliber after caliber after caliber. Most people have probably heard my story of wrecking my Buick. You'll find that in other places. But that one's worth a little time to. It's who the man was. It's just who he was over and over and over and over and over again. And then later, I met this Dr. Paul Fairweather, who was professor of pastoral psych at Fuller. And he was remarkably like my dad. He was a P-51 pilot over Germany. And flew wing, so that he flew wing for guys like Chuck Yeager. He returned to one of those Pilots Association meetings one time for the first time, and the whole room stood in applause as soon as he came into the room. Why? Because he'd saved their asses. The wingman calls the fight and calls the end of the fight and gets him home safe. And he was very much like my dad. I was just fascinated. Now, if you're going to seminary, realize this is rare. It's not impossible, but most seminarians are first sons and their mom's favorites, and that's a whole different world. When my first year at seminary, I thought I was in a mental ward. And it was because of this difference. It wasn't because we were reading different books. It's because of the atmosphere of the place was mother-saturated. And that was foreign to me. So
I think beyond how cool those stories are and as I'm moving there, Caleb, you have to put a picture of a P-51 up in the show notes. It has got to be one of the coolest looking airplanes of all time.
Finally, we could go up against the 109s. We couldn't before.
It is just a sexy airplane.
Yep. Well, I will go ahead and we'll put a picture. We might even make that the picture for the show on the website this week.
Well, what he did was school these whole groups of men into what it is to be a father. I remember one I quote all the time. He said to us one time, we imagine that the Western world is going to fall for the lack of fossil fuel. It won't. It's going to fall for the lack of fathers.
Mm. You know, Adam's not saying a whole lot, but I think that's worth thinking about, because one of the things that happens as I go out and teach this is it's sometimes kind of hard to get guys to stop and think about the reality of what you just said that came from Paul, that we sort of take all of these
cultural cues
and we get really focused on the cultural cues, like transgender bathrooms or whatever, and we don't take it back a step to the fact that, you know, the society is crumbling like this in all of those ways where we see these sort of cultural hallmarks being eroded because of the lack of fathers.
Yep.
And that what we're seeing is Paul's prophecy from, probably the 80s or 70s or 80s coming true now. Yep. And will become more and more true as time goes by. And yet sometimes when I go into a group of men and you give this initial presentation, they're sort of, it's deflated balloons, you know?
Yes. And it's not their fault.
And the reality is that I think we need to stand up and take notice that we have a lot of dads around who are just around, who haven't in the same way that I think that our culture has told mom to really considered what it means and how important it is and even how to act in those situations. I mean, I cannot tell you how thankful I am that not only you had your father, but that you met Paul.
Yep.
Because what in my mind, what kind of happened is this combination between you having sort of the denotative example in your dad, and then it being described to you what that meant by Paul, and then you passing that over to, I mean, countless men through the years. And I'm let's talk about me, but I'm sure Adam, and I'm even sure Caleb from taking classes, and just how many men throughout your 30 years at Concordia got that message from you in every class, whether all of them heard it or not. I know some of them did.
Yeah.
And so, man, what a blessing. What to consider. I mean, society is crumbling around us. We don't really focus much on that on the show, but, and I do think Paul's right. I think it's a lack of fathers.
Yeah. And one of the things that we also got from him was it's never too late. If you shift into being what you really are or what you were called to be, and no matter how many years you screwed it up, the whole thing can be redeemed.
Right, yeah.
The whole thing can shift.
I say that to men whose children are grown. Mm-hmm. I had one guy up in Oregon after I did my talk. He came up to me, tears in his eyes afterwards, and he said, I'd like a copy of your book, but I was not a good dad.
Uh-huh.
I was not a good dad.
Yeah.
And my response to him was basically to put my hand on his shoulder and, you know, tell him he's forgiven for that, number one.
Yep.
And two, to tell him what you've told me, again, from Paul, is that it's not too late.
Yeah. It's
never too late.
It'll be a radical shift for your children. They won't know what happened.
Right. But it's just not too late.
No, that's, I think that's a good point to take our short little break here. We're about the 20-minute mark. So then we'll come back. Maybe we'll skip an ad this episode because we talked about the book a little bit before. And then we'll just hop into maybe a couple questions and stories and things like that for the latter half of the show.
Sure.
All right. All right. We're back from our short little pause there. I won't say break because it's not... It's not like a full break, but especially for our listeners. But we're coming back in, and we're still talking about this idea of fatherhood and grace. And we got three great fathers around the table, so we can get some great stories. And Rod has a bunch, and you know, since he's kind of the background to a lot of this and the perception of fatherhood at this table, Rod, why don't you take us into some of those stories you have?
All right, here are a few. My dad was a physician and surgeon. And I used to work as a young boy as a file clerk in his medical office. And I'd hear some of the office scuttlebutt in the hallways. There was a beautiful blonde southern nurse named Frida. I wasn't sure I was in love. And she got sick. And my dad got wind of that. And I happened to overhear the conversation in one of the examining rooms. My dad said, Frida, are you sick today? She said, yes, doctor. He said, well, I want you to go home and get well then. And Frida answered, my husband and I can't afford that, doctor. And my dad said, Frida, I run this office. You'll be paid anyway. Now go home till you're well and don't worry about the money. I'll make sure you're paid for all those days. One time I was learning some of the basics of being a lab tech from the Japanese gentleman who ran his tech there in the office, his lab. And I was learning how to do some of the basic lab analyses, CBCs, urine analyses, and so forth, as part of my work hours. During one of those sessions, Carl looked at me and asked, do you know why I work for your dad, Rod? I answered, no. Carl said, because he pays me twice what other lab techs are paid on the one condition I never talk about it. I'd work for your dad anytime, anywhere. I forget where I found it out, but I learned that every semester my dad would go to the University of Washington Medical School, ask what seniors were going to have to drop out for lack of money, then he would pay for their whole last year's costs on the one condition that those students were never told where the money came from. Out of the blue one time, I got a phone call from my dad at my fraternity house. He asked, did you say one time that you'd like a sports car? I answered, Dad, I'd love a sports car. Dad said, well, I just saved a young man's life in surgery, and he told me he had just bought an MGA convertible, and he hates the thing. He wants to dump it ASAP. I think you need that MG, so I'm going to buy it for you. One of the first drives I took in, it was up on Hurricane Ridge in the Olympic rainforest. It was nighttime. It wasn't long till I saw flashing red lights behind me. The state trooper was benevolent, and he said to me, "You know, son, you weren't really breaking the speed laws, but when the signs say 50 or 60, you don't have to make all the curves at 50 or 60.
Yeah.
Caleb, I think you've heard that before.
Yeah, no, I get in trouble for that one all the time.
During my senior year in high school, a few friends and I would regularly plan to study together at our house during the evening before tests. It always lasts just a little while, and we end up playing poker instead. My dad would fix iced Coca-Colas and buttered popcorn, bring them down to us. We were, quote, studying in the basement, and he noticed we were playing poker. He would sit down for a few hands, lose $50 or $70, and then go upstairs.
I'm not going to let my kids listen to this episode.
I'm going to bring it on a loudspeaker over to your house.
And the stories just go on, and they're always the same theme. On and on and on and on, and it's always this.
The remarkable part about it, I guess, at least to me, with these stories, is that it's not... It was throughout his life. It wasn't just with you guys. It was with his employees. It was with students that he didn't even know, right?
Yep.
And so part of this is just learning, I guess, how to be a gracious man.
Yeah.
And what it means to be a man in society.
And he made sure each time that nobody knew who did it.
Yeah, I think about that. And in our terms, Paul was on last week recording with us, last time we recorded, Paul Koch on the preaching episode. And we had him talk about the Jagged Word, and he talked about the Bell Ringers Fund, which is where we raise money to give to seminarians so that they buy books and beer or whatever they want. And the only requirement is that they don't write us a thank you note.
Yeah.
And the reason that comes into mind is because I think about what your dad, you know, that story of your dad going into the medical school and paying off their last year, as long as they didn't know, as opposed to, you know, the seminarians typically when they get money, that somebody sends money to help them through that last year, not only do they know, but they get the name, the address, how much money, and then they're told specifically to make sure that there's some retribution there by giving them a thank you note, which isn't bad. I mean, it's polite and everything, but it's just a different view of how to give.
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, one more. My dad drove a Buick, and the Buick salesman was bugging him to trade in his Buick for a new one. And Dad would answer, "The one I've got's just for now, just fine for the time being, but thanks." And the guy wouldn't stop. He would go on to say, "Doc, just take one for the weekend. Try it out." So finally he leveraged my dad into taking a 59 white convertible, red and white tuck and roll upholstery. He consented. And out at our beach place, which he had bought for us on Puget Sound, I had no idea this, but I saw this beautiful 59 white Buick convertible when I drove in and arrived. My dad smiled, tossed the keys to it to me, and said, "Have a good weekend." I took the thing out and took it to 120. But, you know, it was just over and over and over and over again.
That's scary.
One time we were driving along, and my dad, it was near Fort Lewis, and my dad saw all these little fir trees, and he wanted some for his beach place to plant them. Well, of course, it was against the law. It was federal land. So he pulls off, stops the car, opens the door. We run back. He opens up the trunk, grabs a tire iron, and tells me to get some newspaper. And he starts digging up these little fir trees, little baby fir trees. And we wrap them all and run back and put them back in the trunk. And he slams the car trunk door and cuts his hundreds of dollars fly rod in half by accident.
Oh, no.
It was a perfect time for a lecture in morals. And my dad got back into the car and just laughed and laughed and laughed.
That's great.
I'm no psychologist.
Well, that's for sure.
That's true. But, you know, the psychological debate, nature versus nurture, is this sort of... this posture, fatherly posture that you've been describing, is it something that's just part of, is it nature or is it something that's learned?
Well, you know, Paul Fairweather said to me one time, you owe a lot to somebody who's a man, an older man whose name you don't know. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, from what you've told me about your paternal grandfather, the physician, and your paternal grandmother, you don't get a man like your dad. Somebody picked him up in college or in medical school and filled in what was missing, and you got to benefit from it. So another one of it's not too late.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
He
that,
said...
That particular little tidbit, when you I mean, you've been saying that for a long time. That particular little tidbit gave me hope when I met you when I was in my 20s as a new father, having no idea. Right? Because you can get into that growing up without a dad and then having kids. You can kind of get into this position where you feel like, I don't know what the hell to do, and I don't know who's going to show me.
Sure.
And I don't know if there's, like, still time to learn.
Yep.
And so that little, you know, piece right there that you just said, that somebody along the way could have picked your dad up even late in life, could have been a college professor. I thought, well, I'm going to get what I can then.
Yeah.
When I'm here from this college professor. And there were certainly a couple other people along the way, but I mean, thank God for men who've decided along the way to mentor other men.
Yes.
And I don't mean that in sort of the kitschy way that we say it now.
Yep.
Like, where everybody's got to have a mentor. I mean it in the way that...
A life coach.
Yeah, life coach.
Oh, gosh.
Thank God for men along the way who've decided to just be gracious and graciously masculine to other men in their lives who've just, in their everyday movements, decided to be that. I'm thankful.
Yeah, it carries on and on. I mean, I watch it in my son, and he'll watch it in his son.
Right.
Yeah, it's huge because, I mean, even if you mentioned somebody who came up to you, and I've heard this a couple times at different events that people, you know, I was a horrible father type thing, or they regret it. They have adult children now. And I guess one of the things is that it'll affect your, you know, it's not too late in that, you know, something adjusting to that grace, getting kind of infused with that grace can even affect how your grandchildren's lives come out. Even if you feel like you messed up with your own kids. That doing something, kind of making that 180 to grace, can still have effect later in life.
Absolutely.
But it looked to me from the outside, especially in conflict with the advice of the world, it seems like this might put you up against a brick wall with other people, or maybe even in your own house sometimes. You know, what looks like what is grace could maybe look like undermining mom or no or something like that.
Got to know that going in.
Yeah, and so
there'll be times when the kids are the victim of whatever the heck mom did with them that day, and they need a defender if it was nuts, and you get to take that part. Ted remembers one I've told you before. I came home and the whole thing was a Gordian knot, a mess, and I said to my wife at the time, "What in the world did you do to cause this?" And then I pulled out my Visa card and I said, "Go over to Newport Beach."
Great way to start a conversation. Yeah.
And I pulled out my Visa card and I said, "Go over to Newport Beach, get any room you want, have a massage, swim, do whatever you want. Don't worry about the cost of it, but I'm going to try and fix whatever the hell you did." And there are going to be times like that when it's going to be that it's not mom and dad against us kids. It doesn't turn out that way.
I think every time I hear that story, and then I think of times in my marriage with raising our kids, and I think of it two ways. I mean, even in that story, if you can kind of get through the story, and I think that's one of the ones that becomes awkward for us in our age because of just the way we are culturally with men and women. But if you look at what you just said, you actually delivered your wife too.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it wasn't like you come home and there's this Gordian knot and the kids are suffering, but it's not like she wasn't suffering too.
Right.
She was, and the deliverance for her was to, "I'm going to take care of it."
Right.
And if she can just say, "Okay,
Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you. And then go. She's, you know, getting a massage. She's going for a swim, getting a pedicure, mm-hmm. you know. And there's a great deliverance there, too. I think one of the things that we've given that we don't even realize we've given up when we stop saying that men are the head of the house. And I don't mean that in a sort of misogynist way. I mean it in just a straightforward, I think man, I've quoted Chesterton on this. I think the man should be the head of the house because the head is where the mouth is, and the mouth is the part of the body that proclaims the grace of yeah. Christ, right? Yeah. So you pass that on. But one of the things that we've given up comes by what we've gained, and that's an odd way to say it, but what we've gained is the all-powerful we in the house.
Yes.
That it's your father and I, your father and I, your yep. father and I have decided, your father and I have decided, your you know, we.
Yep.
And the reality is that this is kind of hard to say, but it's true. You know, your kids need an ally.
Yep. Yep. There are certain times when they really do. I
mean, the playing field's not equal here. Yep. It's mm-hmm. two adults, and if it's always we, it's two adults against children who are really not free to, you know, fight their own battle.
Yep.
And if they don't have an ally who is,
yep,
they're sort of just throughout their whole lives, things are just happening to them.
Yep.
And in the book, I say that's the hard part is that's the premise of the law, right? Things are sure. just being imposed upon you time and time again. And that's the world that kids live in. Everything's being imposed upon me at home,
yep.
at school,
yep.
in society. I can do this and can't do this because of X reason that seems completely arbitrary to me. Instead of the all-powerful we, if we begin to realize that God has placed these children into our lives and that they are ours, and that furthermore, we are the ones that decided to bring them here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That
they didn't invade.
They didn't invade. They were invited in.
Well, sometimes things just happen.
Well, that's true. But still, they didn't decide, you know, back it up. That sort of changes the perspective, and it is hard. I mean, I can tell, I'm sure Caleb himself could tell stories of multiple times when, out of all of my kids, Caleb and his mom are the ones that have the most tension typically. And I'm sure he could tell you story after story of times when I literally just sort of picked him up and removed him from the situation and
yep.
took him somewhere else.
Yep.
Just because there was no winning, and it was time for yep. some grace to prevail.
Yep. Deliverance.
Instead of, you know, it's like that. In the book, I quote that line from Walther. I'm going to quote it badly here, but one of the tasks of the preacher is to know when the law has done its work.
Sure.
And to immediately stop applying the law and yeah. begin the proclamation of the gospel.
Yeah.
I'd say that's a task of a parent, too. You got to know when the law has already done its work.
Yep.
And you have to understand that the law is the basic assumption in the lives of children.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's the law rules them
yep.
24/7. If you are able to break in with just even small moments of grace, that will be a magical turnaround for
it
them.
It will be.
Well, and one of the things that
small things
doesn't do is make mom the bad guy.
Yep.
I don't think it does that. I think what we need to focus on with a lot of these stories is when you would come home and do that with me, or even the story that you just told, Rod, mom's been home all day with the kids. And,
yep, umpiring.
They're tiring, right? They're exhausting. That line, her ability to judge when the law has been applied enough is probably dwindled with her energy
sure.
throughout the day.
Right.
Sure. And so when you get
yeah,
home,
that's fair.
When you get home, right, it's not even that you're pitting kids against mom and making the kid the victor or something like that. It's like what you said before, but everybody needs a break involved, and you're their only chance at a break.
Yep.
On both sides. And so if you come in and you just amp things up, you're not going to have anybody happy with you. Going to ruin everybody's night, things like that. And so this isn't about being the good guy while mom's the bad guy.
No.
This is just being graceful when somebody else can't. And not
mustard.
Because,
can't,
yeah, it's,
can't pull it off.
Yeah, that's right. Dr. Francisco, we have yet to throw you any serious airtime, and I'd like to. You got four rambunctious little kids across the street here. You got any good stories with them that you'd like to share? I mean, they're
fun. Do I have to tell the Christmas story?
Oh, man.
Sure.
We'd love
the
Christmas
story.
It's
the best story ever.
Sure.
Well, you know what? And if it helps, she gave me permission to use it in the book. I just didn't.
Oh, really? Okay.
She said she didn't care.
It's a good story.
It's and a it's, great story.
And it goes with what we just talked about with mom being tired and done.
Yeah. I don't. It was a couple of years ago, and the kids were just being kids, the weeks, maybe months leading up to Christmas. And we homeschool, so my wife homeschools, I should say, mostly, 99% of the time. So
she's with the kids.
And
she's quite good at it.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking the other day how she should probably be like a homeschool coach.
She should. Sure. And we're going to
get paid for it.
We're going to throw her one more kudos for me before we get into this story. Oftentimes I see people who have as many kids as you guys have, and I think, oh my God, why did they do that? But not with your wife in your house. Yeah. She's amazing.
Well, I am too.
Yeah, you're pretty good.
But so it was the weeks or months leading up to Christmas, and they were being just pains in the rear ends. And at some point, she's with them all day, and it tired, and she proclaimed that, fine, no Christmas gifts this year. You guys are thankless. there will be no Christmas gifts. I don't remember all the details. I think you were over at our house.
I was. It was so great.
And a Friday night, right? Francisco Friday, I think you used to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
we did Francisco Friday this Friday.
Yeah, that's true. It's been a long time. But anyway, I remember saying, I can't tell you the exact words I used.
But I remember it.
Well, you probably shouldn't use the words. We'll lose our clean writing.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Clean writing. But what happened is Kiana.
It's Christmas, for heaven's sake.
Kiana stumbled into the room. Getting them.
Oh, yeah, you tell, because I don't remember.
Well,
don't
Kiana
remember
stumbled into your room where you had gone and purchased an entire Christmas worth of presents, probably because you're an Amazon guy, probably off of Amazon, and wrapped them.
I don't have to deal with people that
and
way.
Put it on your side of the bed. Uh-huh. And Kiana, your second oldest, right, had stumbled in there and saw all these presents and comes running out all excited. Mommy, there is Christmas this year. You got us presents. And Rachel's like, what the are you talking about? And Adam, you can see Adam in the corner. And then he said, there you go. You're on.
Well, I don't remember. Something like, it's freaking Christmas. I'll give my kids Christmas presents.
Yep. Yep.
If I want.
That's right.
Yep. I'm the man here.
Yes. 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 And yes. Yeah,
but it as great. It turned to, again, to be fair to my wife, I'm pretty sure she had bought some presents as well, but I don't think she put her name on it, or from mom. I think she put from Santa Claus, because she wasn't going to give them presents.
They weren't getting any from her. Yeah. No, that's hilarious. That's a great story. Yeah. Can I share one out of the book that's not from anyone at this table? But I always have to share this story when we talk about knowing one of the tasks is to know when the law's already done its work and to apply the gospel.
Yeah.
This is from a pastor in New York City. His name is James Monroe. I think he's an Anglican pastor. And it goes like this. One of my very best friends is my sister, but when I was in fourth grade and she was in second grade, I would say that sacrificial, self-giving love was not at the core of our relationship. One afternoon after school, she and I were having a fight on the second floor landing of our house. I punched her in the stomach. She opened her mouth to cry, and in that moment, without thinking, I grabbed a spray can sitting on the table. Some of you who are of a certain age will remember when it was still legal to use DDT in your garden. For you younger ones, DDT was such a dangerous and poisonous insecticide that it finally was banned. As my sister got ready to cry, I stuck the can up to her face and sprayed the DDT into her mouth. At that moment, my mother appeared in the room. She saw what had happened, grabbed my sister, ran downstairs and into the street, flagged down the first car that came along, got in, and raced off to the hospital. Can you imagine doing that these days?
Nobody would stop for you.
Yeah, okay. I went into my room, sat down on my bed, and waited. I waited for the end, which was not far away. After a half an hour, the front door opened. I heard the steps on the stairs, steps that I knew belonged to my father. I knew that the apocalyptic second coming and the final judgment was about to happen and that I fully deserved it.
Yeah.
My father walked into the bedroom and stood at the door. He saw the guilt and the despair and the sorrow and the shame on my face. Then he did something that has permanently affected my life. He simply opened up his arms. I burst into tears and I ran toward him like a shot, and he folded his arms around me. I can feel those arms at this moment and know whose arms they really are. They are the arms with nail-scarred hands.
I mean, I think that that's just such a powerful tale of knowing that it was time for grace in the gospel.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I think that's a good place to end the show. This is a great episode. Lots of good stories here. Happy Father's Day to everybody listening. I hope this was fun. Maybe you'll pick up the book. Maybe you'll listen to it again with your kids or something like that. Before we go, just wanted to make sure everybody knows where to find us. You can find us on Twitter at Thinking Fellows. You can find us on Facebook. Thinking Fellows is the page there. You'll see our logo when you bring it up. We also have our new website. If you haven't seen it yet, go check it out, thinkingfellows.com.
It looks great.
It's fantastic. It's
thank you to Doug Klimbara, right?
Yeah.
What's the name of his business?
Oh, I don't know.
Doug Klimbara.
You can find him on Twitter also at Doug Klimbara. Great guy.
He does amazing work.
He's a really talented designer and web guy. And then also, a lot of listeners don't necessarily listen on iTunes. A lot of you listen online on the web or via some other podcasting app. But the way other podcasting apps work and most ratings for podcasts out there is, even if you don't like iTunes, I know Rod sure hates it.
I hate it.
What's iTunes?
Yeah, right. There you go.
Good.
The way podcasts are rated is basically determined by iTunes. It's the golden standard. The other podcasting apps get most of their feeds by looking at the iTunes catalog, with perhaps the exception of Stitcher Radio and some other ones. But the ratings there are a big deal. And so I'd like to just thank everybody who's gone into that. We have a lot of 5-star reviews up there, a lot of great comments. Some of them are really funny. Some of them are really great. And if we could keep those coming, especially those people who maybe don't use iTunes or think about going to iTunes, if you open it up on your Mac, or you can do it on an iPhone, or you can even do it online, I think you can get content from iTunes without even having to download it anymore. You can go on there, find Thinking Fellows. If you can write a rating, that's where a rating would really matter. And then anybody who has any comments or questions can also email thinkingfellows@1517legacy.com. All right, guys.
Great.
Thank you for listening. Catch you next time.
Bye.